everyone. Welcome back to the Whole Note Podcast Voices of Chamber, a project sponsored by the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, where we investigate how culture and diversity impact the world of chamber music. I am Amy Boschkert.
And I'm Heather Wang. And welcome back to another episode.
This time, we were honored to have a conversation with Carla Donahue Perez and Paul Araya, two members of the Catalyst Quartet. The Catalyst Quartet are a Grammy Award-winning ensemble consisting of violinists Carla Donahue Perez and Abby Fayette, violist Paul Araya, and cellist Carlos Rodriguez. The ensemble is passionate about diversity in education and continuously seeks to step out of the box of tradition.
Let's hear a little about Carla and Paul's cultural backgrounds and early lives.
I was born in Puerto Rico, and my father is what I like to call mainland American. So he's actually from Tennessee and Florida. But he moved to Puerto Rico to be in the symphony there. And that's how he met my mother, who is Puerto Rican. And I lived there until I was 12 years old. And then my family moved to California, specifically to the Bay Area, where I stayed until I left for college. I've lived in so many different places. I am bilingual and I don't have an accent in either language too. So that confuses people as well.
I am also of Puerto Rican heritage, but I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia. And sadly, my grandfather, who kind of would have been like the patriarch, the one who would have made us all speak Spanish, he passed away when I was really young. So they never passed down Spanish to me, but I mean, I can understand like baby Spanish and commands, and I can react to it pretty well. And I've been practicing, but since Carla and I've been married, I've actually for the first time been going back to the island once or twice a year. So it's been a really cool way for me to reconnect with my heritage.
Carla and Paul speak about the role that Puerto Rican culture played in their introduction to music. Paul also mentions two musical influences that heavily shaped his initial interaction with music. Yanni, a Greek-American composer, keyboardist, pianist, and music producer, as well as Andrea Bocelli, an Italian opera tenor and multi-instrumentalist.
For me, personally, I mean, there's a huge tradition of classical music in Puerto Rico, dating back a long time, specifically started by Pablo Casals when he moved there, and a lot of other incredible musicians. And I feel like the way that we make music there's definitely a culture of classical music and a culture of emoting and music making that I bring with me. And I've always felt very strongly about how that has influenced me.
My story is a little bit more funny, since I'm a little bit more removed from the actual mainland island where they had that incredible Casals influence. I would have to say maybe that there is an innate love of music and dance in Puerto Rican culture, you know, salsa, merengue, plena, all these awesome things that I think maybe kind of came to New York, and because my family's from the Bronx, they moved to the Bronx after Puerto Rico. And that whole love of music and love of dance, I think it became a natural part of culture, so that even though I wasn't necessarily introduced to Mozart per se because of my heritage, I, for instance, like my grandmother used to love things like Yanni and Andre Bocelli, and she had a great love of like really lyrical. There's a lot of ballads in Latin music. And so like there is this love of this lyrical instrumental quality. And so I kind of grew up a little bit with that. That was kind of like my gateway drug into more classical stuff. So I would say that was more of the direction of how I came to it.
To Carla, chamber music is a method of communication and collaboration, as well as a tool that allows musicians to explore different types and genres of music in an extremely special and unique way. For Paul, who is a violist, chamber music is also a vehicle that allows him to expand his classical music repertoire and become familiar with different composers.
Chamber music for me has always been a huge love. It's actually something that I fell in love with when I moved to California. I met this incredible woman who became my violin teacher, who had started a small music school that was modeled after Menuhin School, but the main focus of the school was chamber music. And so that's where I fell in love with string quartets. And actually, at that point in my life, when I was in middle school, that's when I started dreaming of being in a string quartet. So I'm very lucky to say that I now play in a string quartet professionally. And so chamber music means a lot to me. I think that it's a really special way of communicating, not just with your colleagues, but with the people around you. There's such a vast array of repertoire, genres, of things that you can do. It's such a mobile ensemble in terms of being able to collaborate with others and cross over into other worlds that maybe you wouldn't necessarily do in other kinds of ensembles.
For me, being a violist, I think chamber music is an especially important and, like, for instance, it really helps you grow in terms of repertoire because, for instance, we don't have like Mozart sonatas and Beethoven sonatas. So all of this type of repertoire we learn through the chamber music medium. Another aspect of it is that you're growing up, I was always challenged and pushed by my violin and cello colleagues who were doing amazing things. And, you know, being the violist in, you always are sort of like, at least at a young age, you're being put into situations where you have to step up and like match the amazing level of your colleagues. And so that really helped me almost at every aspect of my growing process all the way from high school. And in high school, I was fortunate enough to do programs at the Settlement Music School in Philadelphia and Temple Music Prep. And they had phenomenal chamber music programs that like taught me so much. And just the coaches just gave so much of themselves that I would say that that was one of the pivotal ways that I learned not only musicality, musicianship, but I learned, like I already said, like my first exposure to composers like Bartok and Shostakovich, and just there's so much you, and also so much humanity you learn from playing chamber music, of give and take, of how to be respectful and how to really, really care for what you're doing, but like be okay with not always getting your way and figuring out all the beauty in collaboration and in compromise.
In fact, chamber music was actually the specific thing that inspired Carla to become a violinist and a musician. Paul continues to speak about how chamber music allows musicians to meet other individuals who are just as passionate about music, and highlights the importance of the friendships that are formed in these settings.
So I'm a violinist, and my parents are musicians, so it's kind of hard to say exactly what inspired me to play. They claim I chose the violin myself. My dad's a violinist, so I don't always believe him. But what inspired me to want to be a musician is a different story. That was chamber music.
And I would say I just happened to start playing the viola in my school program. And originally I wanted to play cello, but my mom said it was going to be too big to take on the bus and that the kids would kick it. So I like to say that I kind of compromised because I play the little hand cello is what I like to call it. So I play the viola. And also, I think what really kept me going more so than having a specific role model, I think was the social aspect of the chamber music, actually, so to say, because you make these great friends and they inspire you and you want to keep going along with them. You want to keep climbing the ladder, so to speak, of being able to play better, harder music and play it more beautifully. And I still feel this way today, that it's all the more special when you can share your successes with people than, like, for instance, doing a really nice solo concert, you know, thousands of people clapping for you. But like when you go back to your hotel room, like, is there really anybody there to share it with you? And that's what's really nice about, extra nice about chamber music, is that every little success is a shared success.
The Catalyst Quartet was started 10 years ago with the help of the Sphinx Organization, a nonprofit organization based in Detroit, Michigan, that promotes diversity in the arts and aids in the development of young Black and Latino classical musicians. The quartet has a mission to share the human experience and tell a story through whatever they do, such as through their projects, including the Bach Gold Project and the Uncovered Project.
So the Catalyst Quartet was formed with the help of the Sphinx Organization approximately 10 years ago. And so if you don't know about the Sphinx Organization, they're an incredible organization that promotes diversity in classical music. And they started out as a competition for Black and Latino string players. And, you know, we all participated in it. They've, of course, since grown into this much bigger organization. There's all sorts of really cool stuff. But one of the things that they do is that they help their alumni. They foster their careers in different ways. And one of those ways was by helping us start out the Catalyst Quartet, the Harlem Quartet, Sphinx Virtuosi. And so that's how we started. Of course, since then, we have grown into something else. Like we have shared ethos between the Sphinx organization and us, but we are our own entity and we have our own values that we believe. So we want to share and tell the human experience. We believe that our projects and our programming should reflect the world that we live in. And so we spend a lot of time really thinking about what we present and how we present it. And I like to say that we like to tell a story, and that's not necessarily a concrete story. It could be a theme that we're trying to highlight. It could be like our Uncovered project, for example, where we decided we're going to record all of the string quartet repertoire by historically important Black composers. So, you know, this kind of thing. Our first project album was called the Bocholt Project. We arranged the Bocholt variations for string quartet ourselves. And then we paired that with Glenn Gould's only quartet that he wrote composition. So that's kind of gives you an idea of like what it is that we do. But we have a pretty versatile and a diverse range of things that we do in collaborations.
The Catalyst Quartet do not confine themselves to a certain genre or type of music. The work that they do and their musical activities are extremely versatile and wide in range. However, their main mission is always to impact and to connect with the people that encounter their projects and their work.
So we don't necessarily limit ourselves to any specific type of music. Our main focus is to tell the story. And so we build the programs around that story. Usually it comes from one idea. So like, for example, the Bocholt project actually came from hearing the Glenn Gould string quartet and being like, wow, this is a great piece. Why don't we play this? And then we built the Goldberg variations around that because it didn't exist for string quartets when we arranged it. When Pete Seeger passed away, we decided we wanted to pay tribute to the American folk song tradition. And so we built a program around arrangements that we made of popular American folk songs from the 50s and 60s. And then we paired that with other folk songs from around the world, including Dvorak, including, you know, Goliath, including, you know, Inuit throat singing, including, so you know what I mean? So we play lots of standard string quartet repertoire, but then we also commission and we also play new music and we arrange. So it's kind of a mixed bag.
We go to the edges of the genre where I would, like, for instance, we were on a Grammy winning jazz album, and we would never say that, like, we are jazz artists per se, but like we are totally open to involving what we do in our classical training and collaborating. I mean, we're also doing a little collaboration with, I don't know if you guys know this amazing pop star, violinist, songwriter, Kishibashi. So we have some collaborations there. And there's so many things we can do now in the 21st century. And so we try not to limit ourselves. We've done collaboration with dance. We play like pretty close to the real thing of tango, you know, lots of stuff.
The most important thing is that our projects and our programs speak to people, and that's the main focus and the main goal.
For Carla and Paul, it was difficult to name a favorite performance experience, as every single one holds a special significance to them.
Honestly, because there's so many different kinds of special and kinds of favorites. Like, I mean, when we were much younger, we got to play with members of the Guarneri Quartet and Tchaikovsky Souvenir de Florence. And that was really special for us because we all idolized the Guarneri Quartet and some of us studied with them. And we just like, that was like really like an incredible experience just for the sheer awe of that moment. But then, you know, we also, a few years ago, we did a collaboration with Ballet X, and they, Matthew Neenan, he choreographed a piece with Kevin Putz's
Credo.
And that is one of the most beautiful things I've seen, even though I was like playing and trying to concentrate on what I was doing. That was like really gorgeous.
I think playing in Puerto Rico was special.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Because we had been dreaming of doing that for a bunch of years, and they finally invited us to play at the big art center in San Juan. And it was a really kind of like coming home spiritually kind of thing, which was really, really nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd say that we've been lucky to have a lot of really beautiful experiences.
The Catalyst Quartet and the Sphinx organization are mutually connected. However, Carla and Paul emphasize that despite the shared ethos between the quartet and the organization, the Catalyst Quartet is also very much its own entity with its own goals, which is something that is sometimes misunderstood, resulting in people regarding the organization and the quartet as one singular thing.
Paul also speaks about how in the past, the Catalyst Quartet have sometimes faced doubt and skepticism due to their intention to incorporate a greater mission and a greater goal into their music and performance. It has sometimes caused people to question their legitimacy as musicians.
The hardest thing people, at least about the quartet, is that the Sphinx organization manages us, or that the Sphinx organization is the Catalyst Quartet. Does that make sense? That somehow, even though, yes, they did help us start, and yes, we have a really great relationship and we are so forever thankful to them for helping us, and we still are very much mutually connected, that it is actually a totally separate entities, and that we have our own ethos and that we have our own missions and our own projects that we're trying to do, which are of course aligned because of who we are.
And along those lines, I think another element of it is whenever you are one as an artist is brave enough to try to incorporate some kind of greater mission into your musicality, you always face critics that might be wondering or asking or pushing onto you the fact that, oh, maybe their music isn't good enough. They have to cross over, they have to collaborate, they have to do this and that. So that means they're not legit, you know? And I think that was a really tough stereotype that we had to fight for a long time. Because like I said, it's our 10th year.
We were getting that kind of, you know, and not criticism. Criticism is the wrong word, but just kind of like side eye, I guess, from
while people ago. Just weren't very open to the idea necessarily that you could be playing music at the highest level and you could care as much about Mozart as you do about Coleridge Taylor. And that's a true sentiment. You can absolutely care about all music and you can have a greater mission and also try to respect the score of the composer and do everything that we've been trained to do that from our great role models that taught us in the old school role models. You know, you can have it all. And a lot of people were just very reluctant at first to see that's possible in music.
Carla and Paul look back on their careers as musicians, speaking about the lessons they have learned and the ways in which they have grown up, both as individuals and as musicians.
The biggest thing for me, and I would say this for not just me, just also the quartet, is that I wish I understood how long of a career it is that we have. We're so fortunate, our specific art form, we can play until we're very, very old. Most of people in our career have their biggest successes at a much later age than other art forms. And so understanding, and I think that that's also an experience thing, but I wish I had understood. I always felt like I was in a hurry. Like if I didn't do this by this age, then I wasn't going to get this, or I wasn't going to, you know, like the whole idea of like, you haven't made it, you didn't make it, but like making it is such a different idea. And it's such a much longer road and a different shaped road than we think.
It took me a long time to realize how to practice smart instead of just hard. You know, practicing smart can absolutely defeat practicing hard if it's not as smart of practice. And the other element that goes along with that is just, it's a sort of a tortoise and the hare type mentality, that slow and steady, that if you build your foundation, your technical foundation, which supports the music expression that you want, that foundation there's no rush, you know, I think in general, I shouldn't have been so much in a rush to try to achieve, you know, hard concertos and like all this hard stuff and like flashy and the best sound in the world. Whereas really, really taking care every day of how you feel and of the beauty in the simple expressions and building that over a really long time, that really gets you to the place where you're the most free to say what you want to say artistically, more so than just gunning towards, you know, the better on the, you know, I'm going to be better, I'm going to be better, I'm going to be the best kind of type of mentality.
Influential figures in Carla and Paul's lives have heavily impacted both their musicianship and their personal lives as individuals.
Ann Crowden, my violin teacher in high school, Paul Cantor, my violin teacher in college, and I would say the combo of the Cavani Quartet with Peter Soloff, which I realize is five people, but they're kind of like one person. At least they were, you know. So I think that those are my biggest influences.
I think I'm going to be cheesy again, but I have to put my parents first, because I don't think there's any way I could have developed the
You're making me look bad.
Yeah, I know. But the type of personality that can endure so much, because classical music path is tough. It's criticism, it's harsh, it's a lot of work that's unrequited. You don't get necessarily always get back the work you put in immediately, that is. So I think to learn, to be even able to like develop the skills to make it through and the fortitude, I think that comes from your family situation. And then I think I've owe a lot to my teacher at NEC, Kim Kaskashian, for just giving me like so many tools and just so much of she has such a strong ethos when it comes to what she believes in music. And the importance of music, that it actually is much more important than entertainment, that it has this spiritual and it has this nourishing quality. So it's amazing to have that kind of teacher that you can align that aspect of yourself with, because I think it's important to have a teacher that aligns with you in that way. And then I would have to say, I would love to put Roger Tapping on my list too, because I think that he taught me so much about what it means to be a great person, musician, and also an incredible musician, but also he was such an amazing teacher and mentor for me. And, His example of his life still continues to inspire me and gives me something to aim for what I would like to be like as a teacher and as a mentor.
The Catalyst Quartet started the Uncovered Project with the mission to celebrate the music of historically important Black composers, including Samuel Coleridge Taylor, William Grant Still, Joseph Boulogneux Chevalier de Saint-Georges, Florence B. Price, Coleridge Taylor Parkinson, and George Walker. The project very much serves as a reflection of different kinds of change that Carla and Paul would like to see in the music world.
So we started our Uncovered project like 2.5-3 years ago.
Yeah, end of 2017, beginning of 2018.
Because, I mean, we had already been involved in playing diverse repertoire since our inception. But specifically, it was getting to a point where we were discovering all of these amazing works by Florence Price, Samuel Coleridge Taylor, Parkinson, so many specific works, and we would always wonder, how have we never heard these before? And especially, we would really like to hear these played super, super amazingly with amazing recording quality, and we would like to have access. Everybody should have access to this. So that's when we decided we were going to try to record all of them, and basically like in a row, as fast as we could fundraise, as fast as we could really, really work on them really well and get collaborators. We were going to try to put out every single one that we could find in a row. And those works are now being programmed by mainstream quartets. That's amazing. And it kind of makes us feel really good too, because nobody's still yet recording them. It's very slow still. And they're coming.
Yes.
Launching a recording project is expensive. It's difficult. It's all these things, but it's really cool to see that there is now much more demand for the recordings, because people would like to play these works, and some of them are really, really hard. Florence Price's Second String Quartet is super hard. It's the kind of thing you want a recording to reference, you know? So it's, that was a change that we wanted to see. And that's why we even launched the program in the first place. And obviously there's tons and tons and tons of work to be done, especially in terms of the publishing of these parts needs to be, and they need more editions. They need more scholarly works to back them up. All these things, there's a lot of work to be done, but it's nice to see. So that is one specific change that is going to be happening. Hopefully we have faith that it's going to continue happening.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that the people are open to realizing that the tradition of what we accept as great has also to do with the fact that we have a million recordings of Brahms quartets. We have a million recordings of Beethoven quartets. There's all of this time that has been spent, and that people are willing to do it. And that it's also not just like, you know, a demand that's happening now and that it fades, you know, that it really becomes part of the repertoire. I mean, I think for me, I want to see, that's for sure something, because we've been fighting that fight for so long. And I'm so thankful that people are starting to see it, and that it's that we can feel the change, because, you know, we were getting a lot of pushback even from trying to program these works. When we first started the project, people didn't want to program them unless we programmed them with other pieces. And even then they were a little like, oh, I don't know. So I guess willingness to let the artists know, like, that we know that something's great, and that people will trust that we can program well. That's something that I would like to see. I would also like to see presenting organizations be a little bit more creative. I think one of the hardest things about COVID, and actually one of the, you know, maybe silver linings or things that we can take, was that our chamber music world wasn't ready for this digital output. We were far behind. And I really hope that we can take what we learn from this experience, and that we can, you know, move forward and be a little bit more ahead in this way. You know, the fact that everybody's concerts were available online, that was really amazing. You could watch everywhere. Like, you could watch every single presenting organization all over the United States. And I think that that was incredible. And we didn't have that before. Berlin had it, but we didn't have it. And so I think that that is something that I would love to see more, just like creative ways of presenting things, and lots of different kinds of presentations.
Currently, the Catalyst Quartet have released the album Uncovered Volume 1, Samuel Coleridge Taylor, which contains the works of Samuel Coleridge Taylor as part of the Uncovered project. They are currently hard at work in preparing and putting together the next album containing the works of Florence B. Price, which is definitely not an easy process.
This project was actually really inspired by our colleagues at the summer festival that we teach at, the Sphinx Performance Academy. And they kept bringing in these works. And every time we heard them, because they're fantastic musicians, and they would put them together and we'd be like, wow, that's an incredible piece. Nobody plays that. Wow, that's an incredible piece. Nobody plays that. So then we started by saying, okay, we're going to record these pieces. But then once we decided on the mission of the project, we realized that it wasn't enough to just do those. We needed to do all of them, which meant that we had to include specifically historically important Black composers.
The composers who have passed on already.
Yes. And that were, for whatever reason, their works are incredible and were not given the attention they deserve.
Original quartet works.
Yeah.
And things like clarinet quintets and piano quintets.
Yeah. And so basically we first started with Samuel Coleridge Taylor, Florence Price, and Coleridge Taylor Perkinson, but then quickly realized that wasn't enough. So then we added Chevalier de Saint-Georges, George Walker, and William Grant Still. Now that's where we're at right now for the series, to be that. It's possible that we might add. And that's the crazy thing about this project, is that it is a little bit open-ended. Right now, we've released one album, which was all of the Samuel Coleridge Taylor works, and that had Anthony McGill, clarinetist, and Stuart Goodyear on it. And that was released in February. You can find that on all the things, Spotify and iTunes and everything. Then, you know, hopefully in February of 2022, we're going to release Florence Price's album. And that's going to be 6 works. It's going to be all of her string quartets. People don't know she has 4 string quartets, but she does. And 2 piano quintets, and that will be with Michelle Kahn. And so, you know, we're going through, and the programming is based on what is available.
Every piece that we can find. basically. Yeah. So as of right now, these will be every single string quartet that exists in some kind of even in a manuscript. If it's in a manuscript, we've found it and we're playing it.
We've had to go to libraries. We've had to have scores made that didn't exist. We've had, there's a whole other side to this project that has nothing to do with playing that has been kind of quite eye-opening.
Here is an excerpt of the Catalyst Quartet performing Prelude, Fantastischstück by Samuel Coleridge Taylor.
Unfortunately, Samuel Coleridge Taylor, there are a few works that we know that he wrote, like he wrote a formal string quartet and some other things that are lost. And I don't think we're ever going to find them, which is very sad. So this is his only surviving string quartet. And it's a set of five fantasy pieces. And it's just a really beautiful, incredibly romantic, luscious piece. It's really fun to play. It's shocking that people don't play this piece more, because it is so beautiful. And I think, people like to compare it, like we do with a lot of these composers. We want to compare them to something that we know familiar, and people are like Dvorak, Elgar, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is that he has such a specific style and music making. It's really unique.
When the Catalyst Quartet first started the Uncovered project, they faced all different kinds of setbacks and difficulties. However, their passion and dedication in fulfilling the mission of the project never wavered.
Unfortunately, this project wasn't very popular when we started it. A lot of people were like, that's incredible, good luck. And we fought for a long time to simply fundraise for the project and we're still fundraising. So basically what we've done is we've decided we're going to fundraise one album at a time and put them out as quickly as possible. And, just work like dogs to make it happen. There has been much more interest in the project. And I think especially now that the first album came out and I'm very proud of that album. I think it's really beautiful. I think people have perked up and are like, wow, okay, this is something real. And I think that's really helped. The other challenge, like we mentioned, was the fact that there aren't really good parts out there or scores, or if it's been published, it's been published with incorrect notes and rhythms, and it's a whole...
So a lot of going through, many, many, many times of going through manuscripts and then notes and then the part of the edition.
And sketches.
Fixing the notes. And then, sometimes there's no right answer and you just have to use your musical judgment. So that was a whole process. And then not to mention getting our hands on the parts, which often have to be special ordered. And also getting our hands on the note, get permission, and getting our hands on the actual manuscripts from the libraries and stuff takes a very long time, and special permissions, and you make accounts, and how many pages are you going to get printed, and pay for it.
Recordings are really, really, really expensive. So it's not like the old days where somebody says, hey, would you like to record these things? No, we fundraise all of this ourselves. We do all the organizing. We rent the halls. We hire the guest artists. We pay the guest artists, everything.
And then the added difficulty of being amongst the very first to interpret a set of works.
It's a lot of pressure.
There's no recording to go off of, right? So if you're you have to, there's so much interpreting and second guessing that goes into, you know, that kind of thing.
Which can be a joy as well, but it's just extremely time consuming. So it's been quite a road. And that's, I think, I mean, that and COVID is why it took us so long to get the first album out. But now I think we're on a roll and we'll be able to continue to put them out relatively quickly.
Looking ahead, the Catalyst Quartet are working on many things other than the Uncovered project.
We have a few things that, besides this, obviously, this is our ongoing big project. And then we had a 10th anniversary project that we had to postpone because of COVID, and that we commissioned 10 different works to be written for string quartet, miniature works. So that's something that's happening.
The quartet's 10th anniversary project will include 10 works by composers Joan Tower, Kevin Putz, Jesse Montgomery, who was a former member of the Catalyst Quartet, Caroline Shaw, Kishi Bashi, Paquito de Rivera, Billy Childs, Andy Aquijo, and Angelica Negron. The 10th composer will be determined through a competition for young composers.
So that's a really cool one. That'll be premiered in the spring of 2022.
Eventually, they're going to be paired with music videos.
Yeah, it's going to be a video album on YouTube. And then we also have a project involving a composer in Cuba, really phenomenal composer, Jorge Amado. And we're commissioning him to write us a cello quintet with Gabriel Cabezas, who's from Y Music. And, you know, that project has a lot of layers, really cool stuff that we're trying to highlight, sort of the relationship between Cuba and the U.S. and Cuban Americans and Cubans in Cuba. And and unfortunately, again, because of COVID, that project is kind of taking a different form, taking a little bit longer. Because we were supposed to go there in November of 2020, but that wasn't possible. And it's not possible again this year, so probably next year. And we have a few other things. We have an ongoing project with the Imani Winds. That's a performance project. And hopefully we'll come up with our next project soon, something we'll do in the future. We're kind of always thinking about stuff and trying to figure it out.
Carla Donahue Perez and Paul Laraya are members of the Catalyst Quartet, an ensemble dedicated to celebrating and promoting diversity in the world through music and performance that defy genres and push traditional boundaries. We are so honored to have had a conversation with Carla and Paul and to share their experiences and words with all of you.
To keep up with the Catalyst Quartet, please visit their website, www.catalystquartet.com. To learn more about the Uncovered project, visit www.catalystquartet.com/uncovered. And to check out all of the quartet's other projects, visit www.catalystquartet.com/new-page.
To find out more about the podcast and to connect with us, we would love to hear from you through our website, www.thewholenotepodcast.org, or through email at thewholenotevoc@gmail.com. Also, feel free to follow us on Instagram at thewholenote.voc to learn more about upcoming episodes.
Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to hearing from you. See you soon!